weeks ago, all of the clergy from our diocese, including the clergy here, and all of our lay deputies from the diocese, including the lay people who are deputies for our church here, attended the Diocese of North Carolina's annual convention in Winston-Salem. Now, for those who are not familiar with it, annual convention is a time for people throughout the entire diocese to gather, to worship, to keep up with, and to legislate together. The turnout is usually really amazing, with over 700 expected guests who usually fill up the convention center's two neighboring hotels, and coincidentally, the neighboring hotel's bars. It's true. It was at one such bar that I was planning on meeting a friend of mine who went through the ordination process with me. And having already had a really large dinner and being really full that night, I sat up at the bar and I ordered a plain soda water with a squeeze of lime. The bartender served my drink and made friendly conversation with me. "It must be a busy night for you," I said to him. "Yeah," he said. "There was apparently a church event here this weekend, so I thought I'd have a slow night." And then he goes on to say, "I guess the hotel had a lot of other guests as well." You can imagine the little chuckle I had to myself as he tried to hide his shock when I told him that all of the people in the bar were actually from that church event. It's funny, isn't it, how some folks like to decide what is appropriate and what is not appropriate when it comes to religion and faith. It sometimes makes me laugh when my friends catch themselves using expletives around me and then remember, "Oh God, she's a priest now." They act like I wasn't a priest. They act like I've been a priest for my whole life. They forget that I wasn't a priest even 3 months ago. And they act like they need my forgiveness or consolation or something, forgetting too that I have also hit my thumb with a hammer or spilled an entire cup of coffee on a pastel dry clean only blouse, thereby evoking certain four-letter phrases. The truth of the matter is that sometimes the world around us gets really bogged down in the right or wrong rules. This is right, this is wrong, this is black, this is white. And it's not just contemporary Christianity that does this. We see this today in our epistle lesson. Somebody has tattletaled on the church in Corinth. There had been many disputes over what was right and what was wrong, and they were arguing amongst themselves. So Paul is writing this letter to the Corinthians to clear things up. His response seems sort of surface level at first. The meat that is sacrificed to false gods and then offered cheaply at the market is not sinful to eat. Since there are no gods other than the one true God, it's kind of irrelevant that you're eating food that was offered to gods. Christians are no worse off or better off to eat the food, says Paul. They have the freedom to choose. So someone passed the Heinz 57. You can laugh at that because it's funny. That is, of course, unless it's going to bring someone down. Now, you might think this is hypocritical of Paul at first, but consider it some common sense. As an adult, one might choose to refrain from certain aforementioned expletives around young ears. As someone with a high metabolism, one might refrain from offering those of us who are on diets, chocolate cake or donuts. This is not hypocrisy. It's simply limiting one's freedom for the sake of the other person. So Paul explains it simply and clear, right? But deep down, Paul is telling his readers an underlying message as well. He challenges them about this life that is so conformed around the knowledge of what is right and what is wrong. He challenges them about their life so conformed and structured into legality. Such a life like that is limited, while God offers us God's spirit of freedom. Now, this is not the freedom to act like one without knowledge or without reason, but the freedom to know that it isn't what we eat or what we do that saves us. What saves us is how we love. Of course, this isn't Paul's invitation to break or bend or challenge all of our so-called right or wrong rules, all of those little nitpicky things. This is Paul setting limits on these itty-bitty rules and structuring those limits around the new rule of Christ, around this rule of love. I know many people whose main definition of their Christian walk and journey is that they can't drink, they can't smoke, they can't dance, they can't make music, they can't listen to music, they can't buy a lottery scratch-off card, they can't go to the movies, they can't. And that's an okay way of looking at things, but there is one thing at stake when everything is so black and so white, so right and so wrong. The thing that's at stake is their freedom. Now, I gotta get a glass of water. Now, lest you think that your youth director is treading dangerous paths and granting permission for wild floundering and gluttonous indulgences, you can think again. Being saved by grace and knowing God's love does not mean that we are free to do anything as we please, any time that we please, so there will still be no drugs, no smoking, no drinking, and no sex at youth group.
Sorry.
But what Paul is trying to tell us is that we must stop defining ourselves by what we cannot do and begin searching for a model of our lives around what we can do and how we can love. Our freedom is a gift paid for by Christ who heals us. Our freedom is the ability to respond to God's life-changing love for us. God's life-changing love for us. Now, I want to take this freedom and bookmark it for a second and briefly visit today's gospel. What we see in our gospel passage today is a story about a man who comes to Jesus with an unclean spirit, and he is healed by Jesus. So the story today is telling us that whenever we have a true encounter with the Holy One, we are never the same. This man with the unclean spirit cries out to Jesus, "I know that you are the Holy One of God." Now, at this point in Jesus' life and ministry, this is from Mark 1, so this is the beginning of his ministry. People know that he's a really powerful teacher. He's already starting to get a following. But actually, in Mark's gospel, very few people know that Christ is actually Christ, that Jesus is actually divine. We find that out when he resurrects again. So, this man with the unclean spirit recognizes something special in Jesus. This Jesus guy, is not just one with specific authority, but with this authority that's wrapped around love. He is the Holy One of God. He's not just any teacher, he's the teacher. And because this man recognizes the holy, he is healed. Because he searches out and finds the holy, his life is forever changed. And it is that kind of change that we too have when we really seek out the holy. And it is that kind of authority that Christ gives us and leaves with us even today. It's that kind of change that we get when we seek out the holy. And we get that kind of authority, that new authority that they're talking about in Mark's gospel, that Christ gives to us even today. So going back to the Corinthians text, verse 9 says, "Take care that this liberty of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block for the weak." That's the New Revised Standard version of the text. There are other versions of the Bible. The New Living Translation says, "You must be careful with this freedom of yours." You must be careful with this freedom of yours. Here, once more, is this freedom. And again, I want to define freedom as the ability to respond to God's life-changing love for us. So, now are you ready? Here comes the fun part. In the Greek text, when Paul talks about being careful with our freedom, he uses the Greek word exousia, which means authority, freedom, liberty, or capability. And that's the same word that Mark uses to describe Jesus' new kind of authority and teaching, exousia. So where Paul uses the word liberty or freedom, Mark uses the word authority. It's that same word. In 1 Corinthians 8, we learn that the guiding force behind this freedom or authority is not the rules of right or wrong, but it is the love of God and neighbor. We are not just given the freedom, but we have the authority to love. We have the authority to love. Isn't that awesome? My prayer today is that we can all see, seek out, and be touched by the holy presence of God, so that we all might be healed and changed. And my prayer is that in our healing, we can loosen our grip of our sometimes white-knuckled grip of right or wrong rules, that we can loosen our grip on the nitpicky cannots and bind ourselves to the freedom to try to mirror that same self-giving love that God has for us. I'll end with a sentence that many of you have heard many, many times, and we'll hear once more again today, even after I say it. Walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself for us, an offering and sacrifice to God.